have kids, and we'd have to cancel because of whatever happened that day, and they would announce over the loudspeakers that Christian friendliness is canceled. You can imagine the response, you know, and the jokes that are made that you don't have to be friendly Christians for the rest of the day. Do what you want to do, you know. And so we kind of looked at that and we kind of said, how do we relate better? And we went through this whole like idea of like, how do we change the name? What does that look like for a ministry that's been a part of the community for so long and people have been giving to it for so long as Christian Friendliness? How do you honor that name? And we went through a whole process. You know, we looked at things like the center of Christ being the center, and the kids just called it the center. We looked at the anchor for some of you like nautical people out there, you know, like the sea type thing, how Christ is the anchor in the storm. But it really was a passage out of Isaiah 41 that really rung the bell in my heart and in a lot of the hearts of the staff. And it says this, it says, "Why do you complain, O Jacob? Why do you say, Israel? My way is hidden from the Lord. My cause is disregarded by my God." It's that cry, right? It's that crying out. Israel is crying out saying, where is God in the midst of our suffering? It says, "Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary. Young men stumble and they fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles, and they will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." And that passage rung out in my heart in one of our meetings, and I said, hey, what if we just say that youth hope? Because that's what we're about. We want youth to find hope in Christ. And so this new name was birthed, and we didn't shift direction of our ministry. We just changed the name to encompass what we're really about, is offering hope to people in brokenness. And I'm one of those people who stand before you that, you know, have tried to figure out this complex idea of what does that mean in tragedy? Where is God in the midst? And I don't know if we're going to find all the answers today. I don't know if we can find the philosophical and the theological answers to finding where is God in the midst of suffering? Where is hope in the midst of tragedy? But I do want to look at a couple of things about hope that I hope can paint a clear picture for us. The first time I faced tragedy on a larger scale was when I was 7 years old. There was a knock on the door on a Saturday morning. I was sitting watching Saturday morning cartoons, eating powdered donuts. I can remember it well. And I went and opened the door, and there was a young boy standing me face to face who was exactly my age, exactly the same height. And all he said was, "Hi, my name is Ezra. Can we be best friends?" And as a 7-year-old, you're like, of course. You want to come inside and watch cartoons? I've never met this boy before. I have no clue who he is. And I said, come on in, let's watch cartoons. And we started eating powdered donuts. My mom walks downstairs and sees this young boy sitting on the floor with us and is like, Dave, who's this? I'm like, this is Ezra. We're best friends. He came to watch cartoons and eat powdered donuts. And so we talked and we got to know each other. Ezra lived, or his parents worked at a facility behind our house, and he just came over on a Saturday, wandered off, and came looking for friends, and I'm who he's found. And so Ezra and I started building this relationship where he would come and hang out at my house while his mom, his parents were at work behind our house at a facility, and we would hang out and watch cartoons. They happened to go to the same church that we went to at the time, and we built a great friendship. We began to hang out all the time. And he would always be at the house. I'd always be hanging out with their family. Until we got a phone call at about 11 o'clock at night that Ezra has been taken to the hospital. He came down with a rare temperature and passed away that night. And I can remember as a 9-year-old at that time of just being destroyed. Of what does that mean to lose your best friend? I can still remember laying on the wooden pew of the church and just crying in my mom's lap during his funeral. I can remember the strength of the hug that his mom gave me after the service of just the loss of her child. And I couldn't begin to gasp or understand the pain that their family could experience. All I could know was my heart that I was missing my best friend. And that wasn't just the beginning of growing up. You know, and for many of us, we look at that as tragedy, and I understand that as tragedy. I understand the pain and the hurt and the suffering that is, but I really believe that God used that to start preparing something in me. Because it was when I was in the eighth grade that my father lost his job. And he changed jobs, and he began to kind of slip as the dad who grew up going to church and teaching our Sunday school classes. I began to see the slip in his persona of being this jolly guy who started just to feel the weight of life of losing his job and trying to provide for his family. And in the midst of that, my brother started having pains in his knee. I had an older brother named Daniel. And through that, the testing happened where it came back that he was diagnosed with leukemia. And in the midst of having a diagnosis of cancer without having a job or insurance to cover that, things became very crazy. My brother was rushed to Mayo Clinic where they began working with him there, and I was left with a father in the midst without a job. So we moved to a new area in a new town in Minnesota, in a very small town, and we moved into a hotel. We lived out of a hotel room for about 8 months. Just by the grace of this hotel manager in a small town, you can imagine they didn't have much business, who rented us a room for $10 a month, because it's what we could afford. But during that time, my father went from this man of the house that I knew who loved the Lord, who taught our Sunday school classes, just absolute depression, devastation, turned to alcohol, and just kind of became a different person. So in that time of dealing with that, I learned that in that tragedy, that what do you hold on to? You know, the family structure I had was gone. My brother is diagnosed with a sickness and he is gone. My parents, that family structure began to fall apart, and I'm left at that in junior high, starting high school, going, how do you deal with this? And all I had in my life was knowing the answers that I had known throughout those times of church and Bible study and youth group, that Jesus is present. And I didn't know what that meant because I didn't feel the presence. And after he passed away, we moved to the Quad Cities, and the family structure didn't change. Things were still falling apart, but I continued to follow that pursuit of God and went on to study ministry in college at Indiana Wesleyan, and graduated there and went off to begin to work in an inner city church plant in Charleston, West Virginia, where the first time at a church where I felt at home, because it was people who were experiencing hurt and pain and suffering and needs on a daily basis. And I go, I've walked through this a couple of years. And I begin to see how God used that hurt and that suffering in my life to open a door to let me see the hurt and the pain and the suffering in others. And realize that we are in a life together that is not always picture perfect. And I began to see the commonalities that I shared with people that I really didn't know if I belonged, but began to bring us closer together. And when I was offered a job at position at Youth Hope back in 2003, it was one of those things that I struggled with coming home. But what happened was my father had been diagnosed with cancer at the time. And so I decided to come home and try to be here for my mom during that time and start a new job and a new position. And the last 14 years at Youth Hope, my dad had 4 rounds of cancer. And then during that 4 rounds, my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's before she passed away. And then right after she passed away, my dad had his 5th round of cancer, and then he passed away 2 years ago. And I share all of that. It sounds like tragedy, but I cannot tell you the beauty of the hope that Christ has painted in my life because of it. I look back at my life, and I look at these circumstances of times of just pain and suffering, and I say, God, if you were not present, I would not be standing right here. And it is something that I get to wake up every day to, knowing that God is present and God has a plan and God has a purpose. Even in the midst of suffering, even in the midst of trials, God is present. And as I have searched the scriptures, because I deal with it all the time with youth who come to me with their stories and saying, I just don't see where God is in this. And I get to respond, I understand. I didn't always see where God is either, but I know that he's there. And I want to look at a couple of passages today talking about hope. And I'm not trying to be a downer at all, because the hope of this is that Jesus is present and with us. And there is so much joy and there is so much celebration that comes from that. And I see it not just in my life, but I see it in the lives of others that I come across every single day. The first thing I just want to mention, though, that hope is not always a wish list come true. right? I mean, how many Sunday mornings, I can't tell you growing up as a child, that I always wished what was going to be underneath that tree, whether it was the latest like video game or the coolest toy that was going to be out, and you go to open up the presents, and it's socks, and you're like, what do you do with this? And my mom was always witty, and she would just say, make puppets, you know? And so I walked around with holes in my socks all the time, because I would always cut them up and make puppets out of them, and mom always had to buy new socks. I made her work for it. You know, if you're going to buy me socks, you're going to be buy me more, because they're not going to be used as socks. But we had it was one of those ideas, though, that as a child, sometimes we get this mentality that the things that we want, we will get. And that is not hope. That is a wish. That is a desire. And I'm not saying that Jesus doesn't answer prayers. I'm not saying that Jesus doesn't do miracles. But I'm saying if that's all that we fall on every single day, we can be disappointed in God almost every single moment of our lives, right? Because there's so many wishes, so many desires that we have that we go, God, can you do this? And sometimes he does amazing things, but sometimes he doesn't. And we go, well, where are you then? But as you track the whole entire story of the gospel that we have, the whole entire story of the Bible, the history, we see that God is a God who was present, who understood suffering from the garden when it entered the picture, who immediately stepped in to start a plan of action. And if you look at Revelation, there's a picture of heaven, of glory, where God has made everything new. And we go, well, if pain started here and the glory is here, where are we? And God doesn't leave us in the midst. He creates a plan right away to bring hope through Christ. One of the passages that I love to look at, or I think a lot of Christians love to look at, and this isn't trying to slam your favorite verse or your life verse or whatever, but it's Jeremiah 29:11. Anybody know that passage? Right? For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. It's if you Google that verse, you will find umpteen thousand things that verse has been put on. I mean, from t-shirts to posters to picture frames to bumper stickers, it is everywhere. I Googled this the other night and I was just like 560 pages and I'm like, I'm not looking at them all. You know, it's just one was enough. You know, how many times can you let that verse out there? And it's one of those verses that we look at and we say, well, God, I need a new job and it's going to be okay because I know the plans you have for me. Or God, I want to get into college and I want to get into this school and it's going to work out because I know the plans you have for me. It starts to sound like you're rubbing the lamp. You know what I'm saying? Like you're wishing for that to come through. But I'm not saying that those things aren't true. I'm not saying God doesn't want good things. But if you look at this passage of Jeremiah 29:11, there is some very rich, deep stuff. And I just want to look there. I'll give you a few minutes to turn. We're going to look at Jeremiah 29:5-14. In the midst, you'll find Jeremiah 29:11. And it says this. I will read it for you. It says, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. So that's what the verse starts with. This is Jesus talking to the people. This is God, not Jesus, sorry. This is God talking to the people that he has called into exile. God has called them into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. It sounds like a bad deal, right? That God has called people into exile. Exile doesn't sound like it's not like the amusement park. It's not Six Flags. God did not call people to go to Six Flags, enjoy the day, right? He called them to go to exile. And this is a very interesting part of a passage because if you look at the history of mankind throughout the Bible, we live in exile a lot. Garden of Eden was paradise, right? Paradise until man, Adam, and Eve sinned and they're left on earth, not in the promised land, but in exile. God calls Abraham out of his land to a new place, saying, I promise you the descendants will be numerous of the stars. And they follow along with that plan. And then Israel is going great. And then Israel gets disobedient and they get called into exile under Joseph in his reign. And Joseph brings the people back out. And they follow really great along with God for a long time. But then they fall back into slavery and exile. And Moses calls them out and brings them out. Says, hey, we got a place to go to. And the people follow God along for a while. And then they fall back into exile. And you look at this over and over and over again. About how God has this plan, this promised land that he's trying to offer people and understand that it's there, it is available, but we continue to fall back into exile. And I think that that is a true story for a lot of our lives, that we follow God, we have those moments where we hang on to the promises, but then something happens and it's not like God leaves. It's just a time of exile. It's a time of pain. It's a time of wandering. It's a time of, you know, looking and seeking to see how do we get through the storm? And in this passage, this is what God tells the people in the midst of exile. Verse 5, build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. In the midst of your exile, flourish. Build houses and settle down in this new land. Plant gardens, eat what they produce, marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons, give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and the prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. In the midst of your exile, you still have the call from God to flourish. In the midst of your pain and suffering, it may seem like the world is coming down on you, but God says, take on the world in that moment and flourish. Just because we go through suffering doesn't mean we don't have life. But it's a choice of what we do in that suffering with our lives in those moments that becomes a reflection of who God is in our lives. It's an opportunity to be a light to the rest of the world. And God is setting up Israel. God always set up Israel to be a light for the world, that they would see him through them. And isn't that true today, that us as Christians, as followers of Christ, is that we are to be a light in the world for the rest of the world to see who Jesus is to us. So in the midst of our exile, God tells the people to flourish. It says, yes, this is what the Almighty God says. Do not let the prophets and the diviners among you deceive you. Do not listen to the dreams you encourage them to have. They are prophesying lies to you in my name. I have not sent them, declares the Lord. For this is what the Lord says. 70 years are completed. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my good promise to bring you back to this place. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come back to you to fulfill my promise. 70 years. In case you guys aren't fascinated by weird Bible stuff, I am. In the Hebrew understanding, their numbers have significant meaning, right? The number 7 in the Bible was the number for completion. It's also the number that's assigned for Jesus. It's interesting how many times 7s come up throughout the Bible. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I just love interesting stuff. And this is one of those moments where I look at that and when it says 70 years is the time of your completion when I will return and bring you back to the promised land. And then he says, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope in the future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me and I will listen to you. Then you will seek me and find me, and when you seek me with all of your heart, I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and the places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile. Hope is not always an escape plan, but hope is what gets us through the exile. And when we begin to have a different picture of what hope is and have a different picture of understanding, that hope is not always the way out, but hope is always the way through. I want to move to another passage in the book of John real fast and look at this from a different light. John 14:1. Right before the things get chaotic, Jesus and his disciples are sitting down to a meal. It's a good Jesus to me. It's a good place to be. If you're going to go into the chaos, sit down and have a good meal before it happens, right? So this is the night of the Passover. The disciples don't realize what's going to happen. They have no clue what's about to come. They think Jesus has come to establish a new kingdom on earth. They're all excited the fact that Jesus can do all these cool miracles, that Jesus can feed 5,000 people, hanging on to that miracle, you know, that Jesus can just do that kind of stuff. And it's awesome to know that God and Jesus is present with us, that God has sent his son. The disciples are loving it. They're on a high. And then Jesus sits down to a meal and says, "Hey guys, it's been great, but one of you is going to betray me." And they're like, "What? That's not a hurrah speech." And then he goes on to say, "Hey, I'm getting ready to go somewhere that you can't go." And they're like, "What do you mean? I thought the party was just starting and now you're leaving." And Jesus begins to understand this picture that's going to happen, that he's going to be crucified on the cross, that Peter is going to deny him. And all these things Jesus starts saying, it begins to kind of make this disciples have this uneasiness of going, "What are you talking about, Jesus? Life is good. You're here. Everything's going to be okay. You're going to save the day." And in the midst of this, Jesus throws out this passage. Jesus says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you may also be where I am." Jesus, in the midst of the chaos, gives them a picture of heaven. Of heaven. He paints this picture that there's another place that I'm going to prepare. A place that has been always been ready by God. And I'm going to my Father's house to prepare rooms. Not mansions. Sorry, I know some of us are live in that world where heaven is filled with mansions. But there is this beautiful place where Jesus talks about rooms. And I could go into a whole sermon why Jesus talks about rooms here. But in the biblical Jewish tradition, when you got married, your husband-to-be would go to his father's house and he would add on a room for you and your bride. Right? That was the tradition. Like you didn't go get your own place. You didn't move out from mom and dad's place. You went to your father's house and you added on and you extended the family. And Jesus talks about us as his what? As his bride, right? The Bible refers to his church as his bride. And so Jesus has the understanding that he is going to his father's house to add on rooms for his bride, for his church, for his people. That we will one day be with the Father in paradise. And if Jesus is going to the place of paradise to prepare rooms, then that makes us, in some sense, living in exile because we aren't there yet. His disciples were getting ready to face a time of exile, to be without the physical presence of Jesus that they have known. And he is preparing them and saying, "Do not lose hope because I'm going to be going away." And out of this conversation comes this idea where Thomas makes the statement of, "Hey, Jesus, where are you going? And how do we get there also?" Right? What must we do to get to this place that you're going? Which is where we sometimes can get mistaken that hope is a program. Right? I have to be very careful of this because I run a ministry with kids. We're trying to offer hope. And sometimes it's easy to sit them down and just say, "Well, if you just do this, this, and this, if you read your Bible, pray enough, you know, be good enough, then all your problems will be solved. And we'll put a sticker on you and give you the reward that says you're the good Christian kid." That doesn't always fix their problem, right? It doesn't always fix it in our lives. When I was going through all this struggle, I can't tell you how many books I was given that says, hey, if you just read this, you'll deal with your grief. If you just read this, you'll deal with your depression. If you just see this and this, and all those are great tools. They support you in a great way. But hope is not always a program. Jesus answers Thomas in a very interesting way in John 14:5. Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going, so how can we know the way? Isn't that an interesting question? Jesus, why? How? How do I get through? And Jesus answers with a very powerful statement, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Because hope is not always fit into a program, but hope is always found in a person, in Jesus. And when we understand that, when we come to the understanding that Jesus is our hope, our circumstances, our situations, it's not getting through. It's knowing that Jesus is present, that Jesus is our hope. It is the only thing that has walked me through these years of life where I feel like I've walked through exile. It's the only thing that gives me hope every single day to wake up to say, man, I probably am not in the best shape emotionally to face the day, but I guarantee you somebody else isn't either. And so how can I show them Jesus? How can I be hope? My brother was a great example of this. When he was diagnosed with leukemia, I cannot tell you how many days I would walk into that hospital room and he would be reading Bible verses to the nurses, sharing his thoughts on medicine from God's perspective with the doctors. I mean, he was just one of those kids who just loved God and had a deep understanding. And in the midst of his struggles, he knew that God was present and he was going to use his situation to share that with everybody around him. And at his funeral, I cannot tell you how many of those doctors and nurses showed up to his funeral because they just loved his heart for Jesus. In the midst of all of this chaos, you know, it's one of those things that we know that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and we say Jesus is the hope, and that is amazing strength. That is what we hold on to. That is the foundation of who he is for us, that there is hope and there's life in our circumstances, but he doesn't end it there. Jesus dies on the cross. He comes back and raises himself from the dead, and it's this huge celebration. The disciples are so excited, and they have that one moment where like, okay, Jesus has come back. He showed us that death can't beat him. What is next? And Jesus says those famous words, to go. To go into the world and make disciples, share the gospel, the good news of who I am. And one of the good things that we do about Christians is we're very good at gathering, right? We're very good about coming together. We're very good about having Bible studies, all that kind of stuff. But the disciples love to gather around Jesus too. And our hope around Jesus is good to encourage each other. It is good to build each other up. It is good to worship God together. But the reality is that outside of our circles, there is a lot of pain and suffering, right, in the world. And if we don't go into the world and be Jesus and be the hope for those who are hurting, they will never know him. And we need to come together and gather to encourage, to pray, because we all know in this midst that some of us are struggling. Some of us have lost hope. Some of us have turned to other things to numb the pain. Teenagers. I work with teenagers all the time. And the most popular thing with teenagers is not to face Jesus head on. It is to find something to numb the pain. And if you ask pastor in your surgery, I'm sure when they cut you open, they gave you anesthesia, right? So you wouldn't feel the pain. It's good, right? It's good not to feel that pain of having that surgery. But I guarantee you, if they would have just kept on giving you anesthesia and never sewed you back up, you probably would have bled out on the table and died without even knowing it. And isn't that the truth with things that we use just to cover the pain? You do not understand that you may be covering up the hurt, but you're bleeding out on the table. And if you do not turn to Christ, who is the hope, we will find ourselves in so much hurt, in so much pain, at the end of the rope sometimes on a table, bleeding out and not even realizing it. And I'm saying from experience, I didn't walk out, I didn't skip through all these things in my life just going, oh, this is great, Jesus is with me. I struggled through it. I bled a lot. But I'm standing for you to remind you that Jesus is our hope. And He is with us in the presence. And it's Him who gives hope. He is the way, the truth, and the life. Nothing else will fulfill that in your life but Him. And then Jesus says, go and give that to others. Go and live that hope out. Go and be that hope to a world who is hurting. Be that hope to the lost. So I challenge you, I encourage you to continue to live in the hope of Christ. Continue to walk in it daily, despite your circumstances. If you're having a bad day, if you are in the worst circumstances, go find somebody to be hope to. I can't tell you how many times I have been in my house where I'm just like, I just know if I can handle it today. And you know what I do? I go to a restaurant. I like food. I go to a restaurant and I just talk to the waiter or the waitress, or I talk to the owner of the store and I try to encourage them. Or I will go out to eat and I will just leave money to pay for somebody else's meal. Or I will just go find somebody random that I don't know to have a conversation just to hear their story. There are so many things. The possibilities are endless of what we can do, even the times when we feel like we can't do anything. Because the world is broken, and there are so many people who don't know Jesus yet that we can be the hope to. Thank you for letting me be here this morning. It's a great privilege and honor. Thank you to your church, who continues to be the hope in our community. And I say that with confidence, because I stand before you as a person who is continue to be encouraged by your church and Pastor Steve and so many volunteers. Steve Gossett can attest to the same thing of how you guys are making a difference. And I just challenge you, if you feel like today that you are in exile and loss, know that the plan is that God has it figured out, that He will get you through it, that in the midst of it, Jesus is our hope. Thank you for allowing me to be here.